This is Alan Nathan of Radio America sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily. The debate over health care has reached dizzying proportions, but there now seems to be genuine movement well beyond those well-publicized differences. Weighing in on the discussion is Congressman Tim Murphy, Republican from the great state of Pennsylvania, serving the good folks out of the 18th District. Congressman, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Alan.
First of all, under the headline, Senate Group Omitting Dem Health Goals, the Associated Press recently reported that a bipartisan group of senators on the Senate Finance Committee have gotten a lot closer to health care compromises, and among them is the removal of a requirement for businesses to provide health insurance to employees, and it also leaves out of the equation the controversial default government option. What's your take on this development, and do you think it's going to have any sustained traction?
Well, those are two huge changes in this. One of the big sticking points has been out there is if this government option, which is really not an option, if that remains in it within 5 years, and what is referred to as Section 102 of this bill, would be basically all the private plans would have to do exactly what the federal plan, the government plan, would do, or else they couldn't exist. And the government plan is supported by taxes. Private plans couldn't compete. Government takes over more and more, and before you know it, America is all run by the government insurance. And that has been a huge sticking point. So if that is off the table, it may begin to garner more bipartisan support. That second issue about the mandate for businesses to do things or to tax them is another important point, because that was seen as a way that actually the tax burden on businesses would be so huge that it would cost jobs. One estimated said it'd be over 4 million jobs we would lose in America from that. Now, what I hope is what we can put back on the table is talk more about things that actually save money. Now, I had a number of priorities of my own that I put forth, and one of them was if we did more with transparency, that is, you could find out as much about your doctor, your hospital, your health plan as, quite frankly, you can now go to Consumer Reports and find out about a washing machine. Two, if we had more choice than competition, and that was where you could purchase your health care plan from any state around the country, where you see some states like Utah, it's only $3,000 for a family. New York would be $12,000. That I also wanted to see one where there could be some basic plan option. Many states have loaded up so many mandates on these plans that it's reached the point that families cannot afford it for things that they don't need.
I'm glad you brought that up, because, and I want to get into more of the compromises that this bipartisan group reached, but I've actually written about this myself and talked about it at length, because I've always felt that, you know, whether it's the Republicans kowtowing to the health maintenance organization lobbyists or Democrats succumbing to the American Trial Lawyers Association, both parties were often allowing politics to trump policy. I know this because the Republicans genuinely have always stood for removing health care from the workplace. The argument has been that by managing health care insurances, we would perhaps individually purchase car insurance. Mm-hmm. HMOs would be far more accommodating to customers, because they'd be answerable to more of them, if you will.
Exactly.
And on the other side of the equation, of course, you have Democrats. They claim to want low health care costs for Americans, but they refuse to budge on the tort reform that could really help facilitate that goal. It seems that out of a slavish deference to the legal community, they've always been unwilling to diminish the number of frivolous lawsuits to which doctors are currently subjected, despite everybody knowing that all of us could benefit from the relief. So here's the dissonance. You got Republicans taking money from HMO lobbyists that make them do the opposite of what they want, as you do with the Democrats. Isn't it fair to say that perhaps if we can get the American Trial Lawyers out of the equation, and if we can get the Health Maintenance Organization out of the equation, then both parties would actually be far more reasonable in their current negotiations? Am I off base?
Well, I think you're right to the extent that if we have some choice and competition, you get some of that. When I was a state senator in Pennsylvania, I was the author of the Patient Bill of Rights Law, which took on the HMOs directly, because they were making decisions by non-physicians, by MBAs and others, that said you can't spend more than this. You have to go to the emergency room. We tell you to, even if you're bleeding. And I may be overstating that, but that's what led to some fatalities in the process as well. And the idea that we can't do anything unless we allow someone to sue for it is a problem. And one of the serious concerns we have about this health care bill as it's written is that if the government is taking over more and more and also telling doctors what to do, then the doctor says, look, if you're going to pay me very little, you're going to tell me what to do and then sue me if I do it, I don't want to do it. So it becomes one of the changes that perhaps there should be on the tables. Instead of taking everything to court, you go to something like a health court. That is, it's physicians reviewing the case. And if they find that someone has really done something wrong, they have a case.
Now, for folks not remembering the Patient's Bill of Rights, this was proposed legislation that would have entitled citizens to sue HMOs for the harm caused to them through interrupted or misdirected care, or B, maybe through a compromise and through mediators, as you just suggested. Mm-hmm. The logic was, hey, as all members of corporate America are held accountable when they violate consumer rights, folks naturally question why HMOs couldn't be held similarly accountable, but you know what the answer is. It's because under the Employment Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA, we've been bound by this quid pro quo arrangement wherein HMOs are protected from normal civil lawsuits in exchange for the patient's rights to coverage, regardless of pre-existing health conditions, providing their coverages through an employer client of that HMO, as you might recall. With these dynamics in place, well, you know what, at the risk of getting lost in the weeds, let me move us on to something else here very quickly. About this compromise that's really catching the headlines, despite the compromise over obligatory health care from businesses and the government option, there does remain a ban against insurance companies denying coverage to any applicant. Additionally, no insurance provider would be permitted to charge higher premiums for pre-existing medical conditions. Understanding that all negotiations require give and take, are these would-be changes Solomonic enough, and could you go along with them?
Well, on these issues of the pre-existing conditions in denial or kicking someone out of coverage, one of the ways that this can be handled, someone look at this, what if there was some, if you lowered costs enough so that people were buying more, you create an incentive for that, where people start to say, you know what, I can afford this now for this basic care. I'm not going to have $10,000 a year, but I can do more of this. You reduce a lot of those people who are uninsured. The uninsured recognizing they're going to have some bills to pay if they don't have that. Now, people with car insurance, they make some decisions too. Okay, I'll carry collision. I won't carry this, or carry liability, but not collision for my own car. But what you're bringing up here, though, about pre-existing conditions.
Could pre-existing conditions simply be better covered and financed if we really treated health insurance as we did car insurance all the way, even with the obligations? For instance, I know everybody despises mandated expenditures from our citizenry as required by the government. We can't stand that. But there is still such a thing as the, you know, dynamics of competing interests, wherein the, you know, unless you choose the least of multiple evils, the worst evil can choose itself. With car insurance, you are legally obligated to buy liability insurance. Mm-hmm. You got a car, you got to buy insurance. How about you got a body, you got to buy insurance? Because right now, most of the young aren't participating because they don't think they have to. They feel like they're going to live forever, which is understandable and natural. But if we obligated them to participate in health insurance, then wouldn't that by default naturally elevate the available funds necessary to cover everybody we now find to be so damn expensive?
And that may be part of the compromise that's being discussed. If they mandate for some basic coverage, not the bigger coverage they're pushing down, but mandate for some basic coverage, and in turn, there would be no denial for pre-existing conditions.
Could you live with that compromise?
I would want to see the details of that. It depends how big the basic coverage becomes.
Now, a concurrent development comes from the Congressional Budget Office, which has thus far been unambiguously against all health care bills under discussion. They've been calling them economically unsustainable and unlikely to help 18 million of the very folks the reform was designed to cover. However, the CBO is now saying that, contrary to earlier criticisms, the public option would not endanger the private health care system.
Well, that's after a couple cups of coffee over the White House.
What is it? You know, I was about to, glad you said that, because do you think that this change of heart has anything to do with CBO Director Elmendorf meeting with President Obama at the White House a few days ago? Elmendorf has a strong reputation for independence, but the timing is really hard to ignore.
Well, and I understand they were also excited and blogging about wasn't it great to be going to the White House. Look, I want someone who rolls up the sleeves, puts the eye shades on, and really looks at this critically and independently. There are a number of things that CBO has not scored correctly, which need to be scored, and one of those has to do with prevention. For example, some amendments that I've worked to get in the bill, one is to allow doctors to volunteer at community health centers. Another one is to have hospitals publish their infection rates as a means of trying to drive down those infections, which costs $50 billion, 100,000 lives a year. CBO says, gee, we don't know how to score this because that's prevention. We'll tell you how much it costs to keep track of the data. We can't tell you how much it's going to save if people don't get infected.
What about also allowing health maintenance organizations or health care providers make their services available across state lines? Right now, car insurance, these policies often have medical provisions that apply across state lines. If you have an accident and you need medical care, or B, you have the kind of insurance that covers the other guy, that medical coverage is already part and parcel of that which crosses state lines. Why can't conventional health care coverage do the same?
if we were to do some of that and tell, let's say, for example, if the federal government said, we'll help with a stipend of some sort that helps those above Medicaid level, but to cover emergency care, hospitalization, some outpatient procedures, we'll at least help cover that, any state. Now you've done just what you said. You open up the choices and competition throughout America.
In other developments, both the Chamber of Commerce and the PHRMA, acting on behalf of the drug companies, are getting behind this compromise from this bipartisan group on the Senate Finance Committee. This is seen as a setback, though, to Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. What's your take on that?
Well, I guess they think if pharma likes it, there must be something wrong, pharmaceutical companies. I look upon it as the AMA, when they said that they supported the bill, that's a fraction of doctors, less than 20% of doctors are part of AMA. And a lot of specialty groups and the state medical associations reacted with a lot of outrage.
Yesterday, I had a chance to talk with the president of the AMA, Dr. Rohack, and he couldn't do much with the question of why it was they changed their mind. First, they were against this health care reform, and in part it was because they were going to be denied the Medicare reimbursements. But once the Dems caved on that, all of a sudden the support flourished. What was your response to that?
Well, as a member, as a co-chair of the Doctors Caucus, the GOP Doctors Caucus that I co-chair, we thought this is shocking, quite frankly, that the AMA did that when so many other state associations said the numbers don't add up. Was it a matter that someone cut a deal for payment? But what you have here is, remember, you have a bill that's almost 1,100 pages, and it's third version, and we're waiting for a fourth version. So to endorse a bill that hasn't been read, and may have a lot of other toxic things in there, I think presents a pretty serious problem.
To a certain degree, they said they kind of went along with it because it allows them to be in the room offering suggestions, carrying more influence than they might otherwise have had if they were just shouting from outside. But we'll see how that progresses. Last question.
Yes.
After first threatening to push a bill through the House, Speaker Pelosi has shifted gears a bit. She currently says that a bill could either be passed now or, quote, do it whenever, unquote. Now, while her comments have less than overwhelming specificity, does it appear to you that public opinion has finally slowed her hand?
Well, I think public opinion has had a huge impact. I had a town hall meeting last weekend. We had so many people there, probably 800 people showed up, we couldn't get 200 in the room. We sent out a survey to our constituents. We've had upwards of 14,000 responses to that now. That's almost unheard of for a congressional office. And it's worked this way. Imagine if, Ellen, if you went to the doctor and you said, hey, doc, I want to tell you about it. He said, listen, Ellen, I don't have time to hear your complaints. I know you got a medical record that's 3 inches thick. It's 1,000 pages. I'm not doing x-rays. I'm not doing lab tests. I'm not doing anything. But here's your prescription. I'm signing you for surgery. And say, doc, you don't even know what's wrong with me. And he says, I'm on a time deadline. I haven't got time to hear that. You think he's a kook. That's where we have been with this. And keep in mind, this plan doesn't even take effect for 5 years. So to rush it before August or even before the end of the year for a program that doesn't take effect is nonsensical.
And we'll let that be the final word. Congressman, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Always great to be with you, Alan. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Once again, that was Congressman Tim Murphy of Pennsylvania. This is Alan Nathan of Radio America sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily.